Do you want me to speak on this one?
Yeah.
I'm happy to read it.
I can read it. No, I didn't know.
Oh, okay. I didn't.
Oh, yeah.
Prior.
Do you want me to say a few? You'd ask me to say a few words.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, that's fine.
Yeah, please.
There's been some, I would say, some angst about this one since it's a standard subdivision and sort of what the law is on standard subdivision. So I thought it'd be helpful just to remind everybody, commissioners and public included, you know what the standards are for these. And it's pretty clear under, not pretty clear, it is clear under Delaware law that if a subdivision like this, it's a standard subdivision, meets the requirements of the subdivision and zoning codes, then it is permitted. And there's three cases that really talk about that, and now a fourth one that's sort of in the wind. But I just wanted to go through those because there's some helpful language in those for the commission to understand. One example is Tony Ashburn and Son v. Kent County. It's a 2008 case. Where the Delaware Supreme Court held that when people own land zoned for a specific use, they are entitled to rely on the fact that they can implement that use, provided the project complies with all the specific criteria found in ordinances and subject to reasonable conditions which the Planning Commission may impose. It says to hold otherwise would subject a purchaser of land for specific use to the future whim or caprice of the Commission by clothing it with the ability to impose ad hoc requirements on the use of land not specified anywhere in the ordinances. The result would be the imposition of uncertainty on all landowners respecting whether they can safely rely on permitted uses conferred on their land under the zoning ordinances. And I will point out, this is somewhat in flux about the ability to impose reasonable conditions because we recently got that Smoky Hollow decision, which seems to even limit the commission's ability even further. However, I'm going to set that aside because the county's appealed that. So that's going to be considered by the Delaware Supreme Court. There's an even older case, it's East Lake Partners, where the Delaware Superior Court held that while the desires of the public in respect to uses are pertinent to the zoning of land when the initial uses are established, such evidence is not pertinent to site plan review, except insofar as it is limited to proposed conditions and safeguards to be imposed on the plan itself. That's an important sentence because one of the questions we often get asked in cases where they're standard subdivisions is why even have a public hearing? You know, if it's a permitted use and you don't have any discretion because it meets everything in the code, why do a public hearing? And I tend to personally kind of agree with that sentiment from a common sense point of view, but the cases say that the commission does have the ability to put conditions and safeguards on a plan, and that's why it's important to still have the public hearing. That case also said the Planning Commission has no power to reject a site plan because the residents do not want the land used for a project that is a permitted use under the applicable zoning regulations. There's also a case from 2003, Delta Ada v. City Council of Newark, where the court said, in that one, the denial of a compliance subdivision would be the imposition of uncertainty on all landowners respecting whether they can safely rely on a permitted use conferred under their land under the zoning ordinance. So that's the rule. If it meets the criteria and standards, particularly with the standard subdivision, then there's not a lot of discretion. It's a permitted use. The courts say it essentially can't be denied, with a couple of caveats, which I'll get to. One thing I do want to point out, that this is really limited, in my opinion, to standard subdivisions. Cluster subdivisions, which we see a majority of, I mean, standard ones, if you think about it, are outliers, because they are, do you meet the code, do you meet 99.9C, and if so, you're on your way. Cluster subdivisions have different additional criteria. For example, as you all know, they have that superior design element to it. You have to show how it was designed, taking into account certain things with regard to the land and the design as a result. Likewise, everything I just said doesn't apply to changes in zone, doesn't apply to conditional uses or RPCs, because those are a change from what's permitted on the land. The county has a lot more discretion on those to approve or deny it and to add conditions on it, because it's a totally different category of action than a standard subdivision. But I also want to point out what's important to also understand with these is that the underlying rule in all this is the code. It has to be based on what's in the code. That's where the rules are set. So when we come before, you know, when staff comes before the commission and council to establish rules, that's the time to set the playing field on standard subdivisions. And one of the things I'd point out that really kind of this application was sort of caught in the middle of a little bit was it came under the old version of Section 99.9C, which is really pretty light in its application. The new version was adopted after this was applied. So even those standards changed, and this may have been viewed differently, frankly, if the new version of 99.9c applied. As a further aside, that's why, like the initiatives that this land use working group's talking about, some of those are so important, because they would set the rules for subdivision and other types of developments. So as we start going through that initiative, you know, keep that in mind. But aside from the code, always, always, always what's important is what's made in the record. You know, the applicant always has the obligation and the burden to show that their plan is compliant with the code. You know, frankly, I think that's what a large part of Tepatchie Farms issue was the first time around. It was not only a cluster subdivision, so there was all that had to come into play, but there was a record that didn't necessarily support that the code was complied with on that one. So I just point that out. I know it's frustrating sometimes because you sit here and hear a hearing and you think, well, why am I here if we, you know, if we really are limited what our discretion is. The takeaway from all that is, you're limited to discretion, particularly on standard subdivisions, if there's a good record and it's code compliant. And I would add by record, too, that includes not just the applicant's presentation, but that also includes the information from DENREC. You know, we have soil evaluations in this one. It also includes the information that we get from DelDOT, whether they have any issues or objections with it, because they are the gatekeepers for all the roads and the road improvements. You know, so that all comes into play. But you know, when everything shows that everything's been complied with, the courts have said, you know, that there's just not a lot of discretion on one of these. So I feel your frustration, but I thought it was important, and particularly for the public, so that the public understands what the commission's role is and what the guardrails are on the commission's actions on these limited types of applications.
Very helpful, Mr. Robertson. Thank you.
Yes. Thanks. Thank you very much
Collins.
For that.
Well, with that being said, Mr. Chairman, I move that we grant preliminary approval for subdivision for 2024-03 for Tepatchie Farms with condition and limitations based on the record made during the public hearing and for the following reasons. One, the applicant is seeking approval of a standard subdivision of land zoned AR1 located in the low density area of the comprehensive plan's future land use map. The plan states that the residential development of the type of density proposed here is appropriate in this area. Two, the subdivision will have no more than 21 lots on 24.27 acres of land, resulting in a gross density that is well below what is permitted in an AR1 zoning district. All lots will be at least 3/4 of an acre in size. Three, the proposed subdivision meets the purpose and standards of the subdivision code, and the applicant has addressed the requirements of section 99-9C of the code. Four, DelDOT has determined that the subdivision will have a negligible impact upon area roadways and has not objected to the subdivision. DelDOT will also require appropriate entrance, roadways, and intersection improvements that are proportionate to those 21 lots. The lots in the subdivision will be served by individual on-site wells and septic systems. The suitability for these systems is based upon a DENREC soil feasible investigation performed by Accent Environmental LLC based upon section 5.2.2 of the Delaware regulation govern the design, installation, operations of on-site wastewater treatment and disposal systems. The soil feasibility investigation determined that the proposed lots will handle full depth standard gravity system septic systems, and the conclusions were reviewed by DENREC with the feasibility confirmed. In addition, after final site plan approval, each individual lot will still require another individual soil evaluation with additional soil borings for that lot and approval by DENREC. Six, there are no resources or source water protection areas located within the property as those terms are defined in the Sussex County Code. Seven, this property was previously the subject of subdivision application number 2018-32 that was denied by the commission. However, that application sought approval of a 33-lot cluster subdivision with applicable superior design standards. Among other factors, the commission found that based upon the record at the time, the proposed subdivision was not a superior design. This is a standard subdivision for 12 fewer lots, and the record is different. When a standard subdivision plan meets the requirements of the subdivision and zoning codes, Delaware law provides that the commission must approve it, subject only to condition based upon the record. Eight. The low-density standard subdivision meets the purpose and requirements of the zoning and subdivision codes in the comprehensive plan. Nine, this recommendation is subject to the following conditions. A, There shall be no more than 21 lots within a subdivision. B, the developer shall establish a homeowners association responsible for maintenance of the streets, buffers, stormwater management facilities, and other common areas. C, the stormwater management system shall meet or exceed the requirements of the state and county, and the final site plan shall contain the approval of Sussex Conservation District. The system shall be maintained and operated using best management practices. D, there shall be a forested or vegetated buffer strip that is at least 20 feet wide along the perimeter of the subdivision. As per offered by the applicant, this buffer area shall increase to 30 feet wide along the eastern border boundary of the subdivision adjacent to tax parcel 235-19.00-10.00. This buffer area shall be planted in accordance with the planning requirements of section 99-5 of the subdivision code and utilize existing forest or similar vegetation where it exists. Where trees currently exist in the buffer area, stump removal or construction activities that disturb the existing grade of the area within the buffer shall be prohibited. All silk fences shall be located along the interior limit of the buffer area, the edge of the buffer nearest the interior development, and the final site plan shall identify the limit of the disturbance to prevent disturbance of a buffer area. E, the development shall comply with DLDOT entrance and roadway improvements requirements. F, street design shall meet or exceed Sussex County standards. G, road naming and addressing shall be subject to review and approval of the Sussex County Geographical Information Office. H, the lots and subdivisions shall be served by individual wells and septic systems. I, construction site work and delivery shall only occur on the site between hours of 7 a.m. and 6 p.m. Monday through Saturday. No Sunday hours are permitted. A 24-inch by 36-inch notice sign confirming these hours in English and Spanish shall be preliminarily displayed at the site entrance during construction. J, the applicant shall coordinate with the local school district for a school bus stop within the subdivision. If required by the school district, the location of the bus stop area shall be shown on the final site plan. K, this property is in the vicinity of lands used for the agricultural purposes. Therefore, the final site plan and recorded restrictiveness covenants shall include the agricultural use protection notice, as well as a similar notice stating that the hunting activities occur on adjacent and nearby properties. L, the final site plan shall include a grading plan for the site. No building permit shall be issued for individual lots until an individual lot grading plan has been supplied to and approved by Sussex County. No certificate of occupancy shall be issued until the grading certificate is submitted to the Building Code Department, demonstrating general conformity with the individual site grading plan. M, a revised preliminary site plan either suspecting or noting that these conditions must be submitted to the Office of Planning and Zoning. N, the final site plan shall be subject to review and approval of the Planning and Zoning Commission.
I second the motion.
It's been moved and seconded to grant preliminary approval for 2024-03 Tepachi Farms. Mr. Passwaters, how do you vote?
I vote yes, approval of 2024-03 Apache Farms, the reason and conditions stated in the motion.
Mr. Collins.
I vote yes for the reasons and conditions stated in the motion.
Mr. Allen.
I vote yes for the reasons and conditions stated in the motion.
And the chair votes yes for the reasons and conditions stated in the motion. Motion carries 4-0.